Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Live Through Jesus podcast with Courtney Gilmore. On this episode, relationships are valuable but limited. This is Ecclesiastes 4. Several years ago, when my kids were young, my husband was deployed, one of my friends, I was talking to her on the phone, and she said, "I just miss you. You've been so busy. I haven't gotten to see you or talk to you, really." And I said, "I know. I'm so sorry. I am just so busy right now." And she said, "Well, let me help you. What do you need me to do? You know, I'll do something so that you're not so busy." And I was like, "I don't really need that. That's not what I need. I don't need someone to do something for me." And she was like, "Well, but I could, you know, lighten the load a little bit. You know, I could do some of the work that you're having to do." And I was like, "Really, I'm busy, but I'm also just stressed. And yeah, you could help me, but you can't be my husband and you can't be my kid's dad. And that's really what I need right now." And so obviously my husband was valuable to me and my kids. And there was no person that could be what he was to us. And so during that year, I would like to say I did a little bit better at it than I actually did, but I did learn that God is the one that can do all of the things that my husband was not there to do. And it's kind of hard to explain how God can comfort you and give you peace and give you strength and, you know, be your partner in life if you've never felt that before. But when I didn't have my husband there to do those things, then I learned to rely on God a little bit more to do those things. And I didn't, like I said, do the greatest job at that time, but as the years have gone on, I've started to realize that people are just not always going to be around. They're not always going to be able to help us. They're not always going to have the power to help us or the ability. So I've learned over the years to rely on God because He always can. He's always the one that is able to meet whatever need it is that we have. And so as Solomon just continues to reflect on life, that's what this whole entire book is Solomon reflecting on life. He shifts from last week thinking about time and eternity, and he begins thinking about our relationships with one another. And so I'm going to read the first 12 verses of chapter 4, and then we'll just kind of go back and talk about them. And so he says, "I looked again at all of the acts of oppression which were being done under the sun, and behold, I saw the tears of the oppressed, and that they had no one to comfort them. And on the side of their oppressors was power, but they had no one to comfort them. And so I congratulated the dead who were already dead more than the living who were still living. But better off than both of them is the one who never existed, who has never seen the evil activity that is done under the sun." Okay, actually, I'm going to just stop right there and I'll go over that part and then I'll go to the next part. And so the first relationship that he noticed is the relationship between the powerful oppressor and the weak and vulnerable who have no one there to help them out, no one to comfort them, no one to defend them. And he says, "I've noticed there's a lot of these people, and it's really upsetting to me that there are these vulnerable people out there that have no one there to comfort them." And so that makes him think, you know, it seems like it would be better to be dead than to be alone and be oppressed. That seems like a horrible, horrible life. And then he says, "Actually, though, I think it'd be better if they just were never born at all. Wouldn't that just be better? You know, to never know the evil, never be oppressed in the first place, you know, instead of being oppressed and then dying, it'd be better to never be oppressed at all. Just never know the evil. It'd be better if none of us knew the evil, you know." And if you haven't caught it yet, Solomon is a bit hyperbolic. Everything is kind of extreme. And so initially you might think, "Oh my goodness, why is he going on and on about, you know, such in such an extreme way?" But people do this today. There are people that literally say this. They'll say, well, I don't want to bring a child into a world like this. And so they're in essence saying, because there's so much evil in this world, maybe that not that they don't want to exist, but they're never going to allow their child to exist because they don't want them to have evil in this world. And there are definitely people who feel so oppressed and so alone that they don't want to be in this world anymore. And so Solomon is just saying his real thoughts, and he's kind of rambling through this entire chapter, just, you know, telling us what he thinks when he looks at these people that are all alone and they have no comforter. He's like, it'd be better if they would just die. And then he's like, well, it'd really be better if they just weren't ever even born. They never even had to experience this oppression in the first place. And it's good that Solomon does this. It's good that he tells us his thoughts, you know, because a lot of us think things, but we wouldn't dare say them out loud. And he's just like, no, I get it. I kind of feel that way too. But in the end, we're going to see that he comes to a conclusion, you know, that is better than this one. And so sometimes we have to go through the bad thoughts, the negative thoughts, and all of that to reach the conclusion that, no, we don't want to die. No, we don't wish that we never existed. No, this world isn't so bad that we shouldn't bring children into it. Things like that. And so he's just, at first he's like, I look at all of this and I'm like, man, this is so bad. I just think that we shouldn't even be here. And then he turns his attention to a different relationship. So like I said, he's kind of just rambling. And so he says in verse 4, I have seen that every labor and every skill which is done is the result of rivalry between a man and his neighbor. This too is vanity and striving after the wind. And so he's saying, I see all these people working themselves to death. And for what? To be better than their neighbor? Than to be more successful? To have more money? It's all for ambition. You know, that's all they're doing it for. It's just because they want to be better than somebody else, for pride, for jealousy. And he's like, that's a striving after the wind, because there's always going to be somebody more successful than you and always going to be somebody less successful than you. And so you can sit here and you can, you know, you can get that new car, but then somebody else down the road is going to get a better car. You can climb that ladder and you can reach that height and you can say, look at me, I'm so successful. And then eventually someone else is going to take that spot, or somebody at their job is going to have a higher position than you do. And so you're working for nothing. You know, if that's what you're working for, then you're striving after the wind, because you will catch that thing and then it will slip out of your hands. And so then he goes on to the next thought, and he doesn't really quite express the full thought that he has, but we can gather what his next thought is by the next verse, because he says in verse 5, the fool folds his hands and consumes his own flesh. So we know that what his next thought was, well, then maybe they just shouldn't work at all. You know, if all you're going to do is work for rivalry, then don't work at all. You know, working all the time for no purpose, then maybe you should just quit, which is exactly what we think sometimes. People will think that. They'll think, I'm just working myself to the bone. Why am I doing all of this? I might as well just quit. What's the point? I'm done. But then he goes on to say, well, you can't quit because people that don't work at all consume their own flesh. Basically, they destroy themselves. That is going to destroy your life if you just quit. And so we can't do that either. Proverbs 10:4 says, poor is he who works with a negligent hand, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. And then 1 Timothy 5:8 says, but if anyone doesn't provide for his own, and especially for those in his household, he has denied the faith and he's worse than an unbeliever. And so it's like, yeah, you can't just quit. You can't not work. And so working all the time just to be more successful or have more things than the other person, that's pointless. But not working at all isn't an option either. And so then he concludes in verse 6, one hand full of rest is better than two fists full of labor and striving after the wind. So he's saying we need a balance. We need a little bit of rest and a little bit of work. If we're working all the time and all we're doing is trying to beat the other person, then it's a striving after the wind. But if we're resting all of the time, then we're going to destroy our lives. We're going to have nothing to show for it. And we're just going to have horrible lives. And so we need a little bit of balance in our lives and in our work. And then he goes on, this reminds him as he's thinking about work. So again, he's just rambling. And in verse 7, he says, then I looked again at vanity under the sun, and there was this certain man without a dependent, having neither a son nor a brother, yet there was no end to all of his labor. Indeed, his eyes weren't satisfied with riches, and he never asked, for whom am I laboring and depriving myself of all these pleasures? This too is vanity, and it's a grievous task. And so he's saying, you know, when I think about these men that are just working to be successful and better than their neighbors, that's horrible. But you know what's even worse than that? Is to work and have no one else that benefits from it. And as a matter of fact, you don't benefit from it either because you're working all the time. And so he says, you know, this man has neither brother nor son, meaning he has no beneficiary, no one to enjoy the things that he is working for, no one to enjoy them with, no one to benefit from his labor. And he also has no heir. And so he has no one to hand it down to. And he can't enjoy the riches that he has made because he's working all the time. And so it's like, so then what am I depriving myself for? He's actually depriving himself of the benefit of his labor. And for what? Not for the kids he's working for and the wife and the family. Not so that they can have food and clothing and nice things. It's not for that. And it's not for to hand it down to anyone. And so he's working for absolutely no reason except for himself, and he's not even benefiting from it because he's working all of the time. And so it's like, that is even worse. He says, you know, that is a striving after the wind. You'll never catch anything with it, with that scenario. And it's even worse. It's a more grievous task that you have set before yourself. And so he goes on in verse 9 to say, so two are better than one, because they have a good return for their labor. For if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls and has no one there to lift him up. Furthermore, if two lie down together, then they will keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? And one can overpower him who is alone. But two can resist him, and a cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart. And so he says, so I've concluded, it's better to have someone than to be alone. If you are oppressed, you need a comforter. If you are working, you need a beneficiary. You need an heir. You need a partner. You need someone to benefit from this labor, and you need someone to share the burden with so that you can have a balance, so that you can not have all of the work on you and someone else can do some of these things so that you will have a little bit of rest. You need all of that. Otherwise, your work is pointless. And we also need somebody there to keep us warm, somebody to, you know, feel that comfort with, to enjoy our lives with. And we also need someone to defend us. When somebody is alone, then they're vulnerable. But if they have somebody else, then one person isn't going to come against them because it's two against one. And then he says, and three against one, way better. You're going to be really strong in that sense. And so we need people. We need comforters. We need defenders. We need companions. We need partners. We need helpers. We need people to benefit from this life with us, to share this life with us. When God created Adam, he said, it's not good for man to be alone. I need to create a helper for him. And so he created the woman for the man to help him with the task of tending the animals and tending the land, because that was Adam's job. And if Adam was doing this job all alone, it would have been too much work for him to do. And so God said he needs someone to help him with this, but he also needs a companion. And he says that he made this woman, and then that after he made her, he said, now the man will leave his father and mother and be joined to the woman, and they will become one flesh. Basically saying they'll become a family. They'll become one unit now. And that is what I created man to be like. I created him to need a partner to help him with the difficult things in this life, with all of the burdens of this life, and to enjoy this life with. What good is, you know, all of this work that Adam is doing if there's no one there to enjoy it with? If there's no one there to help him? If he can't go pick, you know, one of the pieces of fruit that he and his wife have worked to grow and say, wow, isn't this good? We did a good job. If he doesn't have anybody to do that with and he just gets the fruit and eats it, it's like, well, that's not too much satisfaction. I can sit here and say I did a good job, but nobody else even knows about it. No one else even cares. And so God created us to need each other, to help each other, and to be companions of one another, to be partners, and to take care of each other in this world. And so I'm going to read you several verses that talk about our lives with friends and family. Proverbs 27:9-10 says, oil and perfume make the heart glad, so a man's counsel is sweet to his friend. Do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend, and do not go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor who is near than a brother who is far away. So it's like, it's good to have family, but your friend family's not always going to be there. And so you need friends too, because you may have a friend that's there close to you and your family might not be around at the moment and you're going to need them. And so you need friends and family, and you need counselors. We all benefit from having a lot of people in our lives that can help us, that can instruct us, and that can be there for whatever it is that's going on. And then down in verse 17 of that same chapter, it says, iron sharpens iron, so that one man sharpens another. So we make each other better. It's good for us to have each other because we can help each other in this life be better than we would be alone. I think that's a lot what marriage is for, is two people together can make one decent person, right? Because we all have our strengths and we all have our weaknesses. And if we can pull our strengths together, then they will, hopefully my husband is good at the things that I'm not good at, and I'm good at the things that he's not good at. And so together we can be good at most of the things that we need to be good at. We can accomplish most of the things that we need to accomplish. And so iron sharpens iron. We make each other better. Proverbs 31:8-9, open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of all of the unfortunate. Open your mouth and judge righteously, and defend the rights of the afflicted and the needy. We need to be there for the vulnerable people and hope that other people will be there for us whenever we need them, whenever we can't speak up for ourselves, or whenever we can't take up for ourselves, that we need to be there for one another. Romans 12:15 says, rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. And that's exactly what I said when I was talking about Adam and Eve. You need somebody there to enjoy all of the good things with you, and you need someone there to cry with you whenever things are hard. Need you them to be there with you whenever things are difficult. And then 1 Corinthians 12, the whole chapter talks about the church and how different people within the church have different jobs, and that one person can't do all of the jobs. But if all of us we'll do what we are good at, then it won't all be on one person, and we can share the burdens together and lift each other up and help each other. And that's what God created the church to be like. That's what He created us to be like in our families, in our communities. We are meant to, you know, come alongside each other and do the things that we're good at so that other people don't have to do those things. And together we can make up, like I said, one good person or one good church or one good community where everything is done. We complete one another in that way. And then in Galatians 6, 1-2, it says, "Brothers, even if anyone is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself so that you too will not be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and therefore fulfill the law of Christ." Now, we need to bear one another's burdens and always, you know, help each other out whenever life is too hard. But I think in this instance, it's talking about when people are caught in trespasses. It means that their sin is a burden to them. And if we love them and we care about them, then we want to restore them in gentleness. We don't want to come up to them and bash them for the things that they're doing, but we don't want to leave them in this sinful state because that is a burden to them. And so we want to come alongside them and we want to say, "Hey, I know it's hard to do the right thing all of the time, but I'm going to come alongside you and I'm going to help you because I know that this isn't the kind of life that you want to live." And so we need to come alongside one another and help each other out. Not just when other people are coming against us, but when we're coming against ourselves, when we're destroying our own lives with sin, then we need people to come alongside us. And then 1 Thessalonians 5:11 says, "Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as you are doing." And so we need each other. That is indisputable. Relationships of every kind are valuable to us. We need family, friends, partners, defenders, comforters, church family. We need all kinds of people in our lives. But people can't do everything. And so that is the next thought that Solomon has. And so I'm going to read you 13-16. He says, "A poor yet wise lad is better than an old and foolish king who no longer knows how to receive instruction. He has come out of prison to become king, even though he was born poor in his kingdom. I have seen all the living under the sun throng to the side of the second lad who replaces him. There's no need to all the people, to all who were before them, and even the ones who will come later will not be happy with him, for this too is vanity and striving after the wind." And so we've been talking about collecting people, basically having a lot of people that love you and care about you and can be there for you. And Solomon is a king, and so he's talking about, as a king, being very popular, having a lot of people that love him. But he says, you know, kings get old and they get set in their ways, and then a wise young man comes up underneath them and the king loses his popularity and the people forget why they loved that king and they start to like this other guy instead. And they'll forget about that old king and they'll say, you know, "I want his successor to come along." And they'll love that successor for a little while and then they'll grow old with him. And so he says, you can't depend on people. You can't expect that you're always going to have people there for you. Everybody's going to love and support you and be there to help you and, you know, meet your every need. You cannot trust that. That too is a striving after the wind. And so if you think that you can depend on people all of the time for everything that you need, then you will be let down. You will never reach that goal. And so he doesn't say it here, although he does go on to say a little further on in the book, but it is implied here that since we can't count on people, we can count on God. Everybody is not going to be around all of the time. No person is able to help us with every single thing that we need. No person is stable in our lives. They're not always going to be around. They're not always going to support us. They're not always going to have the power to do the things that we need. And they're not always going to be able to take all of the burdens away from us. But God can. God is our constant person that is here for us. He is our ever-present help in times of trouble. And so we do not have to be upset whenever we don't have people around, because God is always, always there for us. God is the one that does have the power to do the things that people can't do. And so we need to look to Him as our ultimate comforter and our ultimate companion, our ultimate partner in this life, and our ultimate protector, because only a life lived with Him is a life with meaning and purpose. We've already been talking about that. Why do we do all of these things here on this earth? We, you know, that's what Solomon was saying. Why are you working if you don't have a beneficiary? Well, why do we do all of the things that we do on this earth? He told us last week, it's because we do it for God. If we don't work for God, and then all of these things ultimately are meaningless. God is the one that gives our life purpose. And so I'm going to read you several verses that have to do with God and who He is to us, and then we'll close. If you'd like to receive this as a written lesson, then go to livethroughjesus.substack.com and become a paid subscriber there. With your subscription, you'll receive 4 lessons every month by email and access to all the previous lessons. And digital studies are great because all of these scripture references are linked, and so you can just click on them right from your device. You don't have to flip through your Bible, and you can change it to whatever version you want to read the lesson in. Then digital studies are also good if you'd like to do them with a group, because you only have to get one subscription, and then you can just print off all of your materials, so everybody doesn't have to get their own book. And so it's only $6 a month or $60 a year, and you'll just be able to do continuous studies with me. So go to livethroughjesus.substack.com if you would like this written study. Psalm 121 says, "I will lift up my eyes to the mountains. From where shall my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to slip. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade and your right hand. The sun will not smite you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will protect you from all evil. He will keep your soul. The Lord will guard you in your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forever." And so God is our help. He doesn't sleep. He is there all of the time. And so, as I said, sometimes people aren't around. Sometimes people are busy. Sometimes they are gone, and sometimes they're sleeping, but God never is. God's never too busy. He's never doing something else, never taking care of himself and unable to take care of us. God is always there to help us and protect us. Psalm 127, "Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman keeps awake in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to retire late, to eat the bread of the painful labor. For he gives to his blessed even in his sleep. Behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. How blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be ashamed when they speak with their enemies in the gate." And so he's saying, you know, yes, it's good to have a house full of children, but if God is not the foundation of that house, then you're building it in vain. But if God is the foundation of your house, then God will give to you even when you're asleep, even when you're not working. God will give you benefits of your labor, rewards for all of the work that you have been doing. And then that takes him to children. He says, children are a reward for you that you have all of the time. Those, the family, they never go away. That is a great blessing that God gives to all who are working with him as their foundation, not for themselves, not building up this house for themselves, this glamorous, successful life full of all of these possessions and riches. If you're working with God, for God, with him as your foundation, then he will bless you even when you're not working. One of those blessings is children and family. And then Psalm 128 says, how blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. When you shall eat the fruit of your hands, you will be happy in it, and it will be well with you. Your wife shall be like a fruitful vine within your house, your children like olive plants around your table. Behold, for thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. The Lord bless you from Zion, and may you see prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. Indeed, may you see your children's children. Peace be on Israel. So he's saying that everybody that fears God will enjoy the fruit of their labor. And they'll enjoy it with their family. And that's kind of what we were talking about earlier. If you don't have anyone to enjoy it with, then what is the point? And so God says, I'll bless you with children. Your labor will be fruitful, and so will your wife. And then Psalm 146, praise the Lord, O my soul. I will praise the Lord while I live. I will sing praises to my God while I have my being. Do not trust in princes, in mortal man, in whom there is no salvation. His spirit departs, he returns to the earth. In that very day, his thoughts perish. How blessed is the one whose help is in God of Jacob, whose hope is in the Lord his God, who made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, who keeps faith forever, who executes justice for the oppressed, and who gives food to the hungry, and sets the prisoners free. The Lord opens the eyes of the blind and raises up those who are bowed down. The Lord loves the righteous. The Lord protects the strangers. He supports the fatherless and the widow, but he thwarts the way of the wicked. The Lord will reign forever, O God. O Zion, to all generations, praise the Lord. And so he says, don't trust in man, because men will eventually die, and then they will go back down to the earth. Their spirit will leave them, and they'll go back down to the earth. But God doesn't do that. God will be around forever. And so you are blessed if God is the one that is helping you, if he is the one that you are hoping in. And then it just goes on to say all of the things that God does. It says that he keeps faith forever. Basically, he's faithful to you forever. He executes justice to the people that are oppressed. He gives us food. He gives us freedom. He opens the eyes of the blind. He lifts us up whenever we are having a hard time. He loves us. He protects us. He protects the vulnerable. And he defends them from the wicked. And so God is all of those things to us that people can't always be. Isaiah 40, 28 to 31 says, do you not know? Have you not heard? The everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, does not become weary or tired. His understanding is inscrutable. He gives strength to the weary, and to him who lacks might, he increases power. Though youth grow weary and tired, and vigorous young men stumble badly, yet those who wait for the Lord will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles, and they will run and not get tired, and they will walk and not grow weary. So God is the one that is able to give us power. We don't always have power, and we can't always do for ourselves or to help others, but God can give us the strength and the power that we need. And then speaking of being able to take our burdens, Matthew 11, 28 to 29, this is Jesus speaking, and he says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. I am gentle and humble in heart, and I will give you rest for your souls." God can take the burdens away from us, make it not seem so hard, all of the things that we're doing. He says, "Hand those things to me because I can carry them, and then I'll give you my burdens, which are light, and you'll be able to handle the things that you need to do. I will give you rest for your souls." 2 Corinthians 1, 3 to 4 says, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our affliction, so that we will be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves have been comforted by God." So God is our comforter, and he does that so that we will comfort others with the same comfort he's given to us. And then Philippians 4, 6 to 7 says, "Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. The peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, will guard your hearts and your minds in Jesus Christ." So God gives us the kind of peace that only he can give. The kind of peace that passes all understanding. It doesn't even make sense. No man can give us the peace that God can give us. And so we need to ask him for those things and rely on him to give it to us. And then lastly, 2 Timothy 4, 16 to 18 says, "At my first offense, no one supported me. All deserted me. May it not be counted against them, though, because God stood with me and strengthened me, so that through me the proclamation might be fully accomplished, and that all the Gentiles might hear. And I was rescued out of the lion's mouth. The Lord will rescue me from every evil deed and bring me safely to his heavenly kingdom. To him be the glory forever and ever. Amen." And so he says, no one came to my defense. No one helped me. But I'm not upset about that, because God was there to help me. God came and stood with me, and he gave me strength, and he got me through that situation so that I could accomplish what it is that he had for me to accomplish. And so relationships are valuable. We need people. We need to be good friends and good family and good partners, and defend others and comfort them and share their joys and share their sorrows, so that they will do those things for us, so that we will have a lot of friends and a lot of family, people here that are valuable to us. But we can't rely completely and totally on them. People are human. They're going to let us down. They're not always going to be around. They have limitations. Even if they want to do the things that we need of them, they can't always do those things. But God always can. And so maybe you're in a situation today where you are absent of someone to help you. You're feeling alone. You're feeling like there's nobody around that can do what you need. And if that's the case, then it's okay, because you do have someone that can be what you need. And that person is God. And so you need to go to him and just say, "God, this is what I need." Like I said, it's hard to explain how he can give us peace, how he can give us strength, how he can comfort us, but he can do those things. And so test it out. Go and ask him. Say, "God, I'm absent of these things. I'm alone in this way, and I need you to be this for me." And then test it out and see if he will do those things for you. And then also be a good friend to others, so that they will be a good friend to you, so that you can have people there that will help you. And you can also ask God for that. Ask God that he will bring you people that will also help you, so that you can share this life with them, so that you can share your good times and your hard times with them, to make this life easier to deal with and more enjoyable to deal with. But in the times that you don't have anyone, remember that this life is still worthwhile, that you still have someone to give you power and strength and comfort and peace and love, and that person is God. So that's all I have for today. We will be doing chapter 5 next week, so make sure you subscribe so you don't miss that episode. And then join me on social media at Live Through Jesus, and I'll be posting clips from this and scriptures from here. And then if you would like the blog post that goes along with this, I've decided that I'm going to do the Ecclesiastes blog post at the end of Ecclesiastes, because I'm probably going to group several chapters together, because a lot of them kind of have some of the same points, and so I'm not going to get it out right now. But still, if you would like the blog post, go to livethroughjesus.substack.com, become a free subscriber there. Then when I get these done, I'll email them to you. And in the meantime, you can go back and you can look at all of the blog posts that I've done so far. And I also have the past podcasts and stuff there too. So you can go there and do that. And then if you want to do the studies with me, then you'll have to become a paid subscriber. And that's all I have for today. I'll see you back next week. Thanks, and have a good day.